Welcome back to Word on the Hills, with me, Felicity Sidnell-Reed, my co-host, Gwyn Sheltimer, and our guest this week, Judy Fong Bates. When you first visited China, Judy, you've written that you expected to feel like a tourist, just a peripheral member of the party you went with, which included several members of your family who'd lived longer than you in China. Can you tell us how and why your feelings began to change?
Well, my feelings began to change, and yet at the same time, they didn't change, because even when I go back to China now, I never really stop feeling like a tourist. For me, it remains a foreign country, mm-hmm. because my home is Canada, in spite of the fact that I was born there, and in spite of the fact that I have relatives there. I don't have the same sense of belonging that I have here in Canada, even though I feel, to a certain extent, and outside or here in Canada as well, but it is my home nevertheless. But I think feelings of closeness to China, of course, grew with getting to know people there. And I think that that's true of any place mm-hmm. that you go to. My husband's family is from the UK. And even though when I go there, I feel like a visitor, but because I have family there through marriage and have gone back many times and we have people we know and talk to and converse, you know, you develop an intimacy with the place. And so you feel like a tourist, but a little less of a tourist.
What were the things you found out about the history and situation of your own family, and indeed of China, which had the most effect on the way you perceived your parents?
Well, I was very surprised, and it comes out in the book, to find out, hinted, that there may have been romance between my parents. And growing up, my parents had, at least from my point of view, a very, very unhappy marriage. It was very acrimonious. It was full of arguing. There was a lot of resentment on my mother's part. There was a feeling that her life was over the moment she stepped off the plane. There was just nothing but hardship, and there was really nothing to recommend Canada for either of my parents. But on the other hand, because of the communists, they really felt that they had no choice but to be here. So in many ways, they really were victims of history. And I think that for them, the reason that they were here was because of me. Like with so many Chinese people of that generation, there is that feeling that personal happiness is secondary to family happiness. And family happiness mm-hmm. is always looking into the future, into the next generation, making things better for the next generation. And so in many ways, my parents were willing to sacrifice their lives for me.
Yes. Well, what about the perception, though, of your parents held by their relatives back in China? That was a surprise to you, was it not?
It was. It was a surprise to me, because my father, from my point of view, was always someone who was powerless here in Canada. And yet in China, he was someone who'd sent money back, who actually kept people alive during some of the major famines. He'd actually, through his money, allowed certain members of the family to go to school. And the number of stories that I heard of, you know, if it hadn't been for your father's money, we would have starved to death. It really put him in heroic proportions that mm-hmm. I just wasn't used to.
And your mother, too, was very much
and
respected.
My mother, too. She was very respected back in China. Again, she was someone people went to if they needed correspondence written, if they wanted advice. Compared to other women of her generation and to the people in the village, she was considered very well educated. But here, you know, in Canada, they didn't speak English. They were very powerless. And even by the time I was about 8, I was translating for my parents. And I remember, I think as even as a 9-year-old, trying to struggle through tax forms for my father, you know.
I think that was common.
Yes, it was very common.
Many students who managed the family's negotiations with anything official, or as you say, did the tax forms, mm-hmm. everything like
yeah.
that.
But I think that what I also found out about my parents, it was one of those situations that I really did discover that they were, to a degree for me, unknowable.
Yes.
And I think that everyone has to come to that conclusion to a certain degree, no matter how well you know your parents. And there is that sense that they had a life at one time that didn't include me. And I think that's hard for anyone to imagine and to, in a way, accept. Even though for me, there was that sense that as I got to know more about my parents, in a way, I knew them less because they no longer matched the people that I knew. So it was a very odd sensation. But that feeling of knowing that your parents are unknowable, I don't think is just exclusive to me.
No, no. So do you think these visits and the experiences you had in China affected your own idea of your own identity?
Yes and no, because by the time I went to China, it was 2006, and at that point I'd already been in Canada for 50 years, mm-hmm. and I'd come here as a child of 5 and a half. And when you come at that age, and because of the times, whatever memory I might have had of China was never renewed, because there were no pictures, there weren't any TV programs, there was nothing to say, oh, remember, that's where we went, that's what it looked like. So whatever it was just in the faded past of a child's mind. Mm. So really, when I went back to China as a 55-year-old woman, it really was like visiting a foreign country. And so on one level, it affected me, and yet on another level, it hadn't, because at age 55, you're pretty well formed, you know. I mean, you just can't help it, you know. Life has a way of doing that to you. But certainly, there were certain perceptions that changed, and I really came to appreciate Canada. I came back loving this country even more than ever.
Were you surprised to find that your relatives in China, though they'd never met you, of course, or had seen you as a tiny baby, knew quite a bit about you because your mother and father had sent back all kinds of pictures and things of you in Canada, had they not?
They had. And I guess I was surprised to a degree, because I didn't realize that in China, that having relatives overseas and having this overseas connection gave you cachet. And I didn't realize quite how much cachet it gave you. And so, of course, all these pictures of our family in Canada were on display. And they were on display in a way that no one here in Canada puts them on display. So it was quite amusing, I found, from that point of view.
Well, will you read to us from The Year of Finding Memory?
I will read to you from The Year of Finding Memory. I've decided on a very short passage, and I should set it up. At this point in the book, we had been in China for maybe a couple of days, and we had just met my extended family, and there were many, many members, and I was actually having a lot of difficulty keeping track of who was who. And we had just left the capital of the county, and we were going out to visit my father's village. And you have to keep in mind that everyone in our party was Chinese, except for my husband. And my husband is a very tall man, and I was suddenly in a country where everyone was Chinese, and having my husband in the party gave me a very different perspective, and this is what I'm going to read about. So this is from The Year of Finding Memory. My husband stood in the middle of the road, talking to my Canadian niece and nephew. They were the only two people besides me who could converse with him in English. I smiled to myself, seeing how much he stood out from everyone around him, his towering height, those large limbs and broad shoulders, his pale complexion, his face with its heavy brow and prominent Caucasian nose, his deep-set blue eyes, the light brown hair. In Acton, the town where I grew up, everyone in the town knew who I was, the little Chinese girl. When I was in grade 4, a Chinese family with 2 school-aged children moved into the town. On the daughter's first day of school, the smiling principal brought her into my classroom. I remember how strange her straight black hair, dark narrow eyes, and brown skin seemed in a class full of faces with light hair and pale skin. I felt a flush of heat in my face, and I wanted to hide behind a book. But now I was looking at my Lofon husband in this small market town in China, surrounded by people who had faces like mine. My Lofon husband, who looked happy and relaxed, without so much as a hint of discomfort. And yet I knew that I did not belong in China or in Cheng Hong Si, where I had apparently been born. When my father returned, he had been a Gold Mountain guest who had come home, whereas I was a guest in China, and my home was the Gold Mountain.
Thank you. That was great. I know that people can buy all your books, I believe, even the collection of short stories on Amazon.
Yes, they can, and chapters, yes, Indigo, yes.
And they can order them from any local bookstore.
Yes, yes.
So to connect with us, please send comments, queries, or suggestions for whom we might interview in future programs to wordonthehills897@gmail.com or leave a comment on our website, www.wordonthehills.com, where all our broadcasts are archived. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you'll join us for another program next week.